Hello again, my friends, and welcome to another edition of the Royal Ramble. You may notice that it's a weekday today, and that's because it's a very special edition, because I have a very special guest, as I promised many of you in the weeks that preceded this. We are just a few days away from WrestleMania weekend, and with that, a lot of people are buzzing about the event, but not only that event. There are, quite frankly, a plethora of different events taking place that weekend, which has made it all the more exciting. So with that in mind, joining me right now, I had this person's tag team partner on this time last year. He is representing the post-wrestling family as one half of Poison Rana, Davey Portman. Davey, welcome.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Pretty good, yeah, just wrapping up with things at work before heading to Philly for WrestleMania weekend. So super excited about that, working hard. Went to Collision this weekend, so lots and lots going on, lots of wrestling.
Nice. And aside from WrestleMania and, of course, the Stand and Deliver event, any other shows that you're checking out that weekend?
Yeah, so we're going to the Tribute to the Extreme show on the Friday night at the ECW Arena.
Felt
like this is one of those venues, like, I, as a wrestling fan, I kind of feel I have to go to, and what's better than seeing, like, a bit of an ECW tribute show? I mean, it could be horrendous, but I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So, yeah, going to that on the Friday night. I think I'm just limiting it to that. I do want to check out the sights and the cheesesteaks of Philly. But, yeah, two nights WrestleMania, NXT, and that show, that's enough for me.
I know that you guys have a history of going up the CN Tower. Will you be climbing the Rocky Steps, do you think?
I think that's the plan, yeah. I think Wei Ting from Post Wrestling is kind of talking me into a bit of a early morning Rocky run, doing his route in the film and then ending at the steps. But we'll see how I feel. I'm sure I'll be having a few bevvies on this trip, so it depends how early. But I'd be kind of down for that, yeah.
What I like to do when I have a new guest on the show, I'm kind of a history guy, and I like to learn a little about the background of some of my guests. And of course, people know you from Post Wrestling, and a lot of my listeners were probably carried over from the old live audio wrestling days, which is where John and Wei originated. So can you tell me a little about your own history, I guess, as a fan? What drew you in, and tell me about how this whole relationship with Post Wrestling came about.
Yeah, so I mean, I was a fan since I was a kid, like around 1999, I guess I got into it. Any sort of UK listeners will know that it was around that time that Channel 4 started putting out shows for free. So a lot of people jumped in at that time, and obviously it was the like peak of the Attitude Era and all that. So I was a fan just because of like kind of the car crash TV nature of the show back then. But my background's actually in theater. I trained as an actor. I was working as an actor. So I've always looked at it as theater. You know, I've never really seen it as the same as boxing or MMA or anything like that. I've always been able to separate it and I've looked at it as like a live theatrical physical soap opera. So when I got back into wrestling, which was around the time The Rock returned the last time, the build for, what was that, 28, 27, I started like appreciating more of like the actual wrestling side of it, and people like Daniel Bryan and CM Punk and those kind of wrestlers kind of kept me around when The Rock wasn't there. And then moved to Toronto in 2016. I was a listener of The Law beforehand. Jason Agnew was advertising a Two Strikes, an improv show at Comedy Bar where they were doing it wrestling themed, and kind of met Braden that night. And being kind of new to the city, I didn't have a whole lot of guy friends, especially friends who like wrestling as well. So we started hanging out, and then just the way, you know, everything fell with The Law being no more and like new podcasts setting up and stuff, and Braden needed a new tag team partner, and I just happened to be at NXT TakeOver New Orleans, and he called me that morning, was like, hey, I need someone to cover this show with me. Would you mind hopping on? And the rest, they say, is history. It's 6 years on this WrestleMania weekend that still been covering NXT, and then obviously expanding with Poison Rana to cover other stuff, whether it be more wrestling, movies, TV, everything.
Nice. So it's kind of an anniversary for you then as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Do you find as an actor, though, that you're more, critical of certain performances on screen?
For sure, yeah. Like, I regularly say I don't understand why we have this state-of-the-art performance center, yet there don't seem to be acting coaches there. And when I say acting coaches, I don't mean a veteran wrestler telling you how to do a promo. You've seen in the last, like, few years, the style NXT in particular has become, and it's become very, you know, Degrassi High, soap opera-esque, and if you want these people on your TV show to be doing more acting than actual wrestling, you should maybe hire an acting coach to do that. So, but then again, you see the likes of, you know, Cody Rhodes or Edge or other people who have gone into acting, and how, I mean, I'd say Edge, since coming back from his injury, his just work outside the ring is so much better than it used to be. Not that he was ever bad, but I think they just pick up those extra things that make it so much more believable. In recent weeks, I've been really loving the stuff with Sami Zayn and Chad Gable, just because I completely believe their character. I completely believe that that is the person they are, and their motivations, and their little, like, nuances and quirks within their character and what motivates them. And that's, that's what draws me. And obviously, at the end of the day, the wrestling is the thing that I enjoy the most. But you do have to kind of have the story there as well to make you care for what happens. Mm-hmm. You know, I think last year, seeing Sami and Kevin win the tag titles at the end of night one, tag titles being something that WWE hasn't always particularly cared about. And yet, that main event at night one of Mania, and many people were in tears because it was finishing this beautiful story they've been telling, and with great performances along the way. So, yeah, and then the work The Rock's been putting in his return, where he could have just phoned it in, done the hits, but I think him playing this kind of hybrid character of the Nation of Domination Rock, the Hollywood Rock from 2003, putting it all together with everything he's been doing in the movie business and now being like a corporate officer in the company and all that, it's working for me. So, yeah, you can, in my opinion, you can tell the people who have a bit of an acting background, and it helps their performances 100%.
Yeah, there's definitely a mishmash of different characters involved with this current Rock performance. So speaking of compelling stories and characters, there are a bunch of them next weekend. Of course, NXT Stand and Deliver is what we're here to talk about. That is the show Saturday afternoon. It kind of really feels like these events like this are as close to the old TakeOver shows as we're ever going to get, because it seems like the elite of the elite on these shows. Then you start with a huge grudge match between Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams, former friends. I mean, it must be impossible to keep friends in the wrestling industry.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you knew from that very first day of 2.0 when Trick was just randomly put on the TV screen and we're all going, who's this guy? You knew it's eventually building to this kind of match. You know, tag teams and friends don't stay together forever, and certainly, and you could see there's Sean's NXT. He very much dives into his history and certain angles that have worked for him in his career, and kind of having his students, if you will, play them out. And this is right out of, you know, Shawn Michaels, Triple H, building to that SummerSlam 02 event, even down to, you're damn right, it was me. So, yeah, they've announced it as the main event. There's nothing else, really, that you could have main event this show with, in my opinion. And just two guys who, I'd really love to see them continue this feud, like, through to the main roster. Like, have them have the first time in sort of WWE history a feud is called up to the main roster, because these two are just so slick on the mic. They're very kind of dedicated to what they're doing. The improvements we've seen in Trick Williams' in-ring in just the last 2 years are, like, incredible, I think. So, yeah, this match is the one that's definitely selling Stand and Deliver.
Yeah, there is definitely a natural chemistry there, and especially with Trick Williams. I mean, the emotional investment that people had in that Dragunov match, and then the turn after the fact. I mean, I think we all knew it was coming. I just didn't expect it to be that sudden. In terms of the overall, like, babyface versus heel, a year ago, Carmelo Hayes was the biggest babyface of the brand. He was the guy. and Trick Williams was still kind of a sidekick. A year later, did you expect that Trick Williams would be massively over?
I didn't necessarily see the kind of the in-ring improvements happening as drastically as they did. I think Melo has worked as a heel so much better. He did kind of fall into that trap a little bit for me, that as soon as a babyface wins the title, they become a little less interesting.
Mm.
And I think that was the case with him, and it's definitely this Trick feud that has made him more interesting. Trick always had me with his little one-liners and stuff, so it didn't surprise me that he got that popular that way, but I would say he's been backing it up in ring as well. So, I think this was the direction they were going to go, but I think naturally they kind of got there as well, just with how both guys were raising their game.
Yeah, and so Carmelo Hayes, he made the turn a couple months ago, of course, in that huge angle after, I think it was New Year's Evil or Vengeance Day or something like that. So he turned then. And then another turn we recently saw was Roxanne Perez. And this one is kind of puzzling to me because Roxanne is one of the most white meat baby faces you'll ever find. I mean, I just don't get it. Like, she seems very likable. And I understand the motivation, but has she been working as a baby face for you thus far? Or as a heel, sorry.
I kind of have been enjoying her work as a heel. I agree with you. I think she is such a natural baby face. But NXT is about development, and I think Roxanne had proved she had all the tools already as a babyface, and if they weren't ready to move her up quite yet, they did not have like a slot for her on the main roster, I think this was actually the right move. Get her to do something that's maybe a little bit outside her comfort zone, and we're seeing a lot in wrestling at the moment, the justified heels. It's not the I'm a bad guy now and I do bad things. There's justification, and we've seen that in AEW with Hangman Page in the Swerve feud. We've seen it with the excellent work Drew's been putting out on Raw, where, you have a lot of gripes. You know, you had this title stripped away from her when she was still actually medically able to go. She then has it put up in a multi-person ladder match where the odds are stacked against her. She then eventually builds her way all the way back up after a year, and someone cashes in to change it to a triple threat match, so she doesn't get her one-on-one. So I thought it was pretty justifiable how she's got to this point. And kind of similar to what I said about Melo, she's had the title. She's been the babyface. There is the then, cool, you're a bit bland now, maybe. And I think you saw the crowd starting gravitating to other characters as well. And I think she's pulling it off. I wonder if Cora Jade wasn't injured, whether they'd have gone this way. But for me, Roxanne's been working as a heel way better than Cora has in the last year we've seen her as a heel.
Right.
So, it's been working for me. And I think her and Lyra are going to... They're the two best in-ring women in NXT. I think they're going to have a great match.
Yeah, I definitely think that. And in fact, I'll go as far as to say they're probably two of the best in the whole company, at least in terms of in-ring. But in terms of character development, this is going to be a true challenge for Roxanne, I think. She was kind of bland, as you said, as a babyface, and I think one thing that she needs to step up is her promo game. I think she'll probably have a chance to do that as a heel, or more of a chance to do that as heel, to kind of develop a character. So I'm kind of looking forward to that, and I think she could potentially be like an Athena is to ROH.
Yeah, in that absolutely.
Sense. I guess... Who, in terms of like the new character development, do you expect a title change in this match? Like because to me it suggests that if she loses this match, I mean, I guess it creates more motivation for her to want to be bad, but at the same time it kind of kills her momentum.
Yeah, we're in this place as well where both women should really be called up at some point soon, but I don't like call-ups when there are no plans for them. I'd much rather they are called up when they're ready. So then you kind of fall into this trap of maybe they'll be spinning their wheels a little bit in NXT. I do think it's harder to book a babyface champion. I can't really think off the top of my head right now other heels that could be challenging. Lyra. We've already had the Blair Davenport feud. That's the only one that really springs to mind. So maybe just from a title scene point of view, you do go with Roxanne here, and you can maybe try and elevate some of the other baby faces to challenge against her.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Unless, I don't know, I'm not sure what the ETA is on Cora's status. I'm not sure if you guys have any word on that.
No, I feel it was a knee injury, right? So it's probably, you're looking like 6 months or something, I imagine. I don't know off the top of my head.
Okay, so moving along, we have also announced is the NXT tag title match. It's interesting how they chose to go about booking this one. It just felt very random to bring the OC down from the main roster. And then, of course, Bron Breakker was basically signed to a SmackDown contract a couple months ago, yet he's still competing in NXT. Do you think that kind of telegraphs the outcome here? Like, will we see a title change?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, we've got the finals of this tournament happening Tuesday night, so we know. I'm hoping there's some kind of screwy finish, so we get multiple teams in there. I'd love to see Axiom and Nathan Fraser and the LWO be in this match as well, because I think they'll make it better. I've actually been really enjoying the Wolf Dogs, and obviously there's money in Bron Breakker as a singles act, but this is the most interesting Baron Corbin has ever been, and I think they're bringing out the best of each other. You kind of enjoy, and you're growing to like now, and I just think if we're just getting OC versus the Wolf Dogs, that is the least interesting combination to me imaginable. But yeah, I think you kind of got to. I think there's probably big plans SmackDown after Mania with Bron Breakker to just strap a rocket to the guy. And I would strap the rocket. I don't want to see him take months of just middling feuds. I think he should be right at the top of the card.
Do you think that the comments made by his father last year at the convention kind of adversely affected his, his career trajectory?
I would hope not, and I don't think so. I mean, I think Bron did publicly put out a statement as well, kind of condemning those comments. He's been heavily featured ever since then. He hasn't really toned down any of the Steiner references with his gear and his entrance and all that. So I don't think so, and I think WWE clearly see money in this guy and are just hoping, like a lot of things, that people kind of forget. But it is his father. It's not him and his opinions.
Understood. And then also up for grabs is the NXT North American title, which will be defended by Oba Femi, one of the newest recruits out of the Performance Center. He will defend against the duo of Josh Briggs and Dijak. As far as I know, I don't know if there's anybody else added to the match. Do you think this is the kind of WWE's version of the meat madness that AEW has been famous for lately?
100%. And especially that AEW didn't end up pulling the trigger on that meat madness match. They're like, all right, we'll do it. They've got great big guys in this division, though. Oba Femi has, like, for such a rookie, he has such this aura about him. And the way he carries himself, his promos, I think he's a really compelling character, and I think they see big, big things for him. Dijak put out that tweet recently when he did the moonsault off the cage, and he was like, hey, I was T-Bar, and I was, like, struggling to get booked on main event, and I'm going to make the most of every single match I have. And I think he's really shown that in NXT. Briggs as well. Brayden and I, when Briggs and Jensen were first put together, we were laughing at these guys so much. Their vignette, everything was so corny. Mm-hmm. But then they built this real natural chemistry between them, and their wrestling just got better and better. And I think one of the highlights of the Iron Survivor match at Deadline last year was the stuff Dijak and Briggs were doing together. And I came out of that going, man, I wouldn't mind seeing them as a tag team. So I think this match is going to be really fun. My interest in this show definitely heightened last week when they announced it was going to be these three, because I think all three have something to prove. I do see Oba Femi retaining, but I think this could be a bit of a sleeper on the show.
Yeah. I used to actually make fun of Briggs and Jensen consistently, so I can imagine your points back then. I actually compared it with Briggs and Jensen and Hangman Page on the other show doing kind of the cowboy gimmick. That Hangman is more of like the Yellowstone cowboy, and these guys are like the Toy Story cowboy. And I don't mean that from like a PG versus non-PG type thing. It's just how they were presented on camera.
It felt very much of this is your character. It was like, okay, guys, we're going to have you and you come together, and you're going to be a cowboy version of the APA.
Right.
And you didn't get a sense that they knew each other beforehand. They had those weird vignettes where they were cooking steaks and finishing each other's sentences and all that. But over time, like, I completely believe that these two are boys. And
yeah.
Jensen, who's so young, I see a bright, bright future for him, because he seems to just be like a real, like, really wanting to learn. He seems so passionate about his wrestling. You just look at his t-shirts of like these throwback All Japan shirts and things that people he admire, and I'm like, yeah, they're the people you should be watching. I see a lot for those two.
The one benefit I think for Brooks Jensen is that while he is second generation, his father never really achieved that level of success that most second generation talents' fathers have. So I think that benefits him in a way that he's more able to stand out more, at least.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, rounding out the card, we have the big one for the NXT heavyweight title. Ilya Dragunov defending against the number one contender, Tony D'Angelo. Kind of came out of nowhere, this announcement that Tony D was the number one contender. How do you feel about him in this spot?
Unfortunately, I think it's this match that brings the show down. Mm. I think they're both going to prove people wrong. Ilya is one of the best in the world. Like, uh-huh. If you were to say that he's in your top five, I absolutely wouldn't argue with you. I think he makes everyone around him better.
Yeah.
And D'Angelo's been proving himself as well. And if the title isn't going to be as part of the Trick Williams Carmelo Hayes story, and you're not bringing anyone in from outside, you look up and down the roster and you go, I mean, I guess it is Tony D'Angelo. He's the only one who hasn't faced Ilya, really, in this title. It's all felt very sudden. I think we needed to have the character shift of D'Angelo happen about a month before this, where he's becoming this a bit more serious character. Yeah. I think he needs to turn full heel for it to work. It just feels... He's still doing the like cartoonish Italian monster thing he did when he first joined, but he's really trying to make it less cartoonish now. But you know, he's still kidnapping people and taking people for dinner and stuff. So it's just jarring. And then you see Ilya being in this cartoon character world as well, where, and bless him, but he's the biggest overactor up and down the roster, which is part of the appeal of an Ilya Dragunov. He's this weird, like, Shakespearean character, and he wrestles like a Shakespearean character, and his promos are like it. But when you then have that meeting Tony Soprano, it's just not really working for me, and I can't say I'm excited about it. And it's when you mentioned earlier, like, this feels the closest to a takeover we have. It's this that makes me not feel that way. Mm. And it kind of reminds me of that 2.0 era where you're just having these weird characters against each other, which is a shame, because I definitely think D'Angelo's in-ring work has improved. And I think his character work is great. He fully commits to it. I like Stax. I like Rizzo. I do like the act, just doesn't feel main event. And it's clear, like, it's not the main event. And therefore, it doesn't make me as invested in the, like, world title match as I should be.
Yeah. No, I get your point with that. Like, to me, it feels, the character just feels too gimmicky for a title match.
Cool.
In the sense that you mentioned earlier, like, the believability aspect. With Tony D, like, I don't believe that he's this way in real life. Like, I feel, I get a sense that he's just playing a character.
Hmm. And it's some of the restraints of, I mean, okay, we had Blood on Raw last week, but it's some of the PG restraints as well, because it's always funny, like, oh, he drives someone to the river and then we don't see them.
Right.
But really, for this to work, he needs to just kidnap Ilya and beat him the F up, you know, like make him a bloody mess and make this step up a gear. But just taking him to a bridge and then having him walk home, it's like, okay, we're still in that cartoon world.
Yeah. So one thing that people always look forward to following these events, especially in recent years, well, not as recent as last year, they didn't do it, but is the WrestleMania Monday, where certain NXT talents may be called up to the main roster. But I noticed that Triple H is kind of taking a more systematic approach to bringing talent up rather than just at random. And like you said, I always appreciate when they have a plan for someone before bringing them up to the main roster. Do you see, from the list of talents in NXT, do you see anyone in particular being called up post-WrestleMania?
I don't think we're going to have so much of the Raw after Mania thing. I'm actually surprised they're not on the main roster leaning into more. Because I figured when we were having, you know, Melo and Braun and, well, Stratton is full-time now main roster, but I figured it would be a way to try and sell tickets for Stand and Deliver. You know, you have Bron Breakker featured regularly on SmackDown, and hey, and you can see him on Stand and Deliver in NXT, and I thought it would be a way to kind of cross-promote a bit more. The only one I do potentially see is Trick Williams as a surprise call-up, and that is if you want to continue that feud. You know, maybe you have Melo win the first match, which, I don't know, I feel you're gonna want that big reaction for Trick in Philly, but you know, you could have Melo cutting a promo on SmackDown about how he's above NXT and all that now, and then Trick comes and attacks him and continues that feud. But apart from that, I don't see a place for your Roxanne's and your Lyra's quite yet. Ilya is someone I would like to see caught up pretty soon, and I think he could have that kind of Gunther run.
Yeah.
You know, just something completely different and unique, and give him just these big featured matches that are unlike anything else you really see on the main roster. I could absolutely see that. I'm not sure if now is exactly the time to do it. I could see the family get called up altogether at some point, perhaps, but there's no one screaming out to me right yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. I think Trick Williams is probably the obvious choice, as you said. And I keep forgetting, actually, that Carmelo was actually called up to SmackDown a few months ago. So that is a really good point. I hope to see this feud continue myself, and hopefully on the main roster.